Every one of you contributed. I'm so proud of the new players, the new coaches. People had all the excuses it couldn't happen, but you all did it, and I'm spoiled now. I'm going to count on a lot more.
We just getting started.
But most importantly, we're giving you this game.
No,
the Afternoon Show with Christian Arcan and Andy Hart starts now on WEEI.
Welcome in WEEI Afternoons, Christian Arcan, Andy Hart. We are live in the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio, brought to you by our New England Ford dealers and the freedom of choice. Shop deals built for you on the New England Edition F-150, the official truck of the Boston Red Sox. Andy Hart, how you doing?
I am tremendous.
Good.
Well, you want more than that?
I was just, you know.
Ask me how I'm doing. I'm doing tremendous.
That's great.
How could I not be?
I thought you'd have a comment on Robert Kraft, maybe.
I think I have lots of comments on Robert Kraft. The thing that came first and foremost when I read this very, very, very long story, lots of scrolling on my phone downward, felt a little bit repetitive, felt like a good editor if you had taken like a college writing class, might have tightened it up a little bit.
Don Van Natta and Seth Wickersham, for that matter, because they've collaborated on a lot of Patriots-related pieces over the years.
Yep.
Do not use an economy of language. They are just, I mean, it is, the Ringer's got nothing on this.
And you don't have to. I mean, they're not in print. So it's not like there's space to be accounted for.
Right.
Everybody can scroll on their phone or their computer. But literally the first thing that I took away from this, the story about Robert Kraft's desire to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and basically the admission, I think, by everyone that he should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame and will be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but maybe not soon enough to appease his own desires and appease the desires of his top PR man, Stacey James. This reminded me of, and you're gonna laugh at this because it's stupid.
Okay.
So you probably haven't gotten there yet. You will someday. Coaching T-ball?
No, not there yet.
Okay.
Someday,
it's challenging.
Someday I hope to, yes.
It's challenging.
Yeah.
And one of the first challenges is, can I play? Can I play? Can I play this? Can I play that? And I had a rule in that era of my coaching career. Mm-hmm. If you ask to play it, you are guaranteed to not play it that day. You ask to pitch, you're not pitching that day. You ask to play shortstop, you're not playing. And some of these voters seem to be treating Robert Kraft the same way via Stacey James. You ask so much to be in the Hall of Fame. You know what? You're kind of pissing me off, and I'm not going to put you in the Hall of Fame, even though you have a great candidacy. Isn't that the main takeaway from this?
It seems like
they rub people the wrong way.
Big driving force of it, and I don't think that it started that way. Like, I think that there is something to be said about there being maybe some kind of, I don't want to say secret underground agenda, but it does seem like there are people who are just dead set on not letting this guy in the Hall of Fame and not even really discussing it. Like, that's, it's like just a no from the beginning. Like, they're not even willing to entertain it. And I think that's suspicious. I do.
It has to be.
That's very suspicious.
You look at his credentials.
They are all there.
And then even if you look at his, I think they call it warts later, Peter King says, like, every candidate has warts. Joe Namath threw interceptions, and I'm like,
that's not the same
as Robert's
kind of warts.
We're
talking about here.
But Jerry Jones has warts.
Yeah, Jerry
Absolute
Jones, 100%.
Similar type warts, right?
Literally and figuratively.
Probably. But so everybody, he should be in the Hall of Fame. Because there's lots of guys in the Hall of Fame with actual warts, warts similar to his, not just interceptions thrown. I don't know why Joe Namath had to take a stray there for throwing a few extra picks in a different era of football. But even the scandals for Robert Kraft, I would say others have scandals that are in the Hall of Fame. So that can't keep, especially when it's really hard to argue what he hasn't accomplished. I mean, the story leads off with old friend, not really, old enemy, Bill Polian, saying he checks every box to get into the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
And apparently Bill Polian is someone who is arguing for him.
Right.
In these super secretive cloak and dagger meetings that you can't talk about Fight Club and all these things they do in that room.
By the way, didn't that all kind of come off as pretty gross to you, by the way? Just the way it's all so very political and,
well,
you know,
weird.
No one talks about it. Like, it's so important. It's like it's the Football Hall of Fame, guys. You know, it's not the Paris Peace Talks here. Like, I found that to be very, very schmoozy, very sort of slimy. Like, I don't know if he meant to write it that way, have it come off that way, but that's how it came out.
And I think everybody has, or most people feel like halls of fame, I guess is the way you're supposed to say it, halls of fame, you're supposed to just know it, right? Like, the idea is, if I really have to talk you into it for an hour and a half,
right,
the guy's probably not really a Hall of Famer. But I don't think Robert Kraft falls under that.
I don't think you have to talk anybody into it. Like, it's a pretty quick elevator pitch. Like, here, 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 and here. By the way, it was the most successful team of the last two decades.
He saved the team.
Yeah.
Then he helped turn the team into the greatest dynasty in the history of the sport. And off the field, he built a business empire for himself, but also, more importantly, for the league. That famous photo with the lockout being bridged with him hugging, what's his
Saturday,
name?
Saturday, yeah.
Saturday. Like, and it's not like it's an era where no one knows those things. Oh, really? He plays a role in the TV contracts? I didn't know that. Everybody knows that.
Everyone
it's
knows
like
it.
An open talking
right
point.
Right there in CBS. The CBS scene was right there in
right.
the building. Like,
so
yeah.
it's all known. So the scandals don't necessarily blackball him from my perspective. The resume, the record, the candidacy is without compare. So the only thing I can think of is they've done themselves a disservice with their PR campaign, which I'm fine with in a way. Because it would annoy me too. I said it this spring when freaking Christian Kendrick Bourne mm-hmm. was lobbying to be a captain. I was like, I'd never vote for the guy. He right. keeps asking to be a captain. If you ask to be a captain, you're not a captain. I hate it. But I would also say, isn't it how business is done? Don't the college
Definitely.
Ranks, like they send Heisman like packets and quirky, funny things. Like remember Ryan Leaf was in the can and they were sending everybody a leaf with his picture on it.
What
like,
kind of leaf?
it's a great question. I'm going to leave that one alone.
I didn't know that, but yeah.
But no, in the Heisman world, all those SIDs send those to all the voters to mm-hmm. try to get them to vote for their guy and increase the notoriety.
Right.
And this whole process is done that way. The guys on TV are always raving about, like, you know, J.J. Watt, Rodney Harrison, Bill Belichick's talking about Rodney. This guy's got to be in. We're campaigning for this guy. So Stacey James can't campaign for his boss?
No. I mean, I think that I don't know exactly what he's doing. They've described a lot of what the voters have clearly leaked to Van Natta and whoever else researched the story.
Yeah, there's weird words like corners people at the Super
right.
Bowl.
Corners people. A lot of backslapping.
That's
a lot
like
of this,
a negative
lot of
connotation
like,
there.
Yeah, you know. Like,
but then he's also like, he takes them out to dinner.
Right.
I'll take a free dinner.
Free dinner, up in the owner's suite.
Right.
You know, things like that. I wonder. Because Jerry Jones, I mean, listen, it's nice to get a free dinner. It's nice to go up in the owner's suite and be sort of wined and dined and stuff like that. What do you think Jerry Jones was doing to curry favor? What do you think he was offering some of these
voters?
Saying
straight cash?
I'm saying maybe that, maybe a ride in the old cat wagon. Like, you know, like that's, he was, I'm thinking Jerry Jones probably was taking it up a notch.
He does have the cowboy bus. Have you ever seen the cowboy bus that goes to the combine?
That's what I'm talking about, yeah.
What you happens
know,
in the
we know,
cowboy
we know what
bus.
Goes on in that bus.
Stays in the cowboy bus.
Seen those pictures?
Maybe. I don't know. I just, this is very weird. And then it's almost, some of it seems personal. I don't know what he's done.
I think there's definitely an element to that.
But
yeah.
What has he done to these individuals? It used to be like 48 people, but then this committee is like 9 people and he finds the, whatever. What has he done to these people? Has he threatened them? Has he bullied them in the past about coverage of his team? Has he, I just wonder, because he's a powerful guy.
He is.
And he could probably make life difficult on a lot of people if he wanted to.
Well, that goes both ways, doesn't it? If there's people, other owners, other bigwigs, whatever, who want to keep him out, and they're making those voters laws saying, hey, listen, you know, you keep him out of here, I'll make it worth your while. And 5 other guys are all doing it, too. That's 5 billionaires versus 1. You know what I mean? Like, it could be as simple as that.
Are you telling me it's lucrative to be one of these voters?
I would think so, yes. It seems like it. That's how it came off. It came off very schmoozy. It came off very sort of, hey, you know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. I'll get you on the committee. I'll have them talking about it. I'll stand up and speak. I'll do all this stuff. It's ridiculous, I think. I mean, I think the whole thing's pretty preposterous. But that's the way they do it, and fine. And they have their way of going about it and nominating people and all of that. And whatever I think about it, that's what they do. And I think that there's been some sort of compromise going on here. And I don't mean like, you know, the compromised, all right, we'll give you this if you give me that. Like, they're compromised against Kraft. It seems that way.
So do you think he won't get in?
I think he will get in now that they've separated the coaches and the contributors. I think that's going to make it much more difficult to leave him out.
Yeah, because I think he deserves to be in. I know I listened.
He should have been in anyway. I mean,
Jones and Keefe were talking about it. I don't know if I believe owners should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but they have them.
They are. So
like,
they
it's
are,
not my decision.
Be,
they're already in.
Right.
Because I'm not sure owners actually lead to winning. I think owners lead to losing, 100%. Bad owners equals losing. I'm not sure if good owner is a direct route to winning. It's a first step. But like, you could be a good owner, but if you didn't have Bill Belichick and Tom Brady,
right,
are you winning?
Well, what makes a good owner? You know?
Stability, investment, you know, caring.
Growing
some of the
game.
Things you don't feel from John. I don't really care about grow the game.
I think that
I
matters.
Look at it from a Patriots perspective.
From the Pro Football
he runs
Hall
the
of Fame,
Patriots.
That matters.
Like, the TV contract thing, I don't even really care either. You know why he wanted a big TV contract? Because it makes him more money. It makes his
sure.
team more valuable.
Yeah.
But from a team perspective, from winning championships, do I believe necessarily that owners can make it happen? No, I don't. I think they can try. They can make good decisions. And bad owners can ruin it. We know that. Mm-hmm. Washington for years under Daniel Snyder. There's plenty of franchises where I think owners proved you can lose even if you try to win. But does Robert Kraft, is he a direct connect to winning? Or did he make some really good decisions along the way that was the winning? Like Bill Belichick and Tom Brady are the winners, right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Right. And but I think bringing in Belichick, sticking with him after that year, Belichick and the decisions he made, I mean, it all was symbiotic, I thought. I didn't think there was...
Called the dynasty. Watch it again.
It was. But, I mean, I think that... I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that's also going to be, if there's anything maybe standing in his way now that they've split up the two categories, it's that movie. That movie, I think, is going to hurt him all over again.
He had nothing to do with it.
Okay. I mean, listen, it's very clear he did, and it's very clear that he turned down one production company and then brought in another guy who was a friend of his who let him have Final Cut. And that's in and of itself. From an artistic perspective, I'm not going to pretend to be offended because I don't make movies and I don't really care, but I can see how that would be and I saw the other, that Gibney guy, the first guy that they went to, and he was talking about, you know, the viewer thinks they're watching some unbiased thing. It's like, do they? I don't know if they really do.
No, they don't.
But it makes it better, and it makes it more credible, and it makes it more, you know, watchable, I think. That was borderline unwatchable. We watched it because we're Patriots fans.
Right.
But, I mean, that was just so flagrant. It was so obvious. And for him to come out afterwards and be like, yeah, I was disappointed in it, too. Really? Yeah? You were disappointed in how much they trashed Belichick? That really bummed you out, huh, Robert? Like, you were right there doing it. You were right there pouring the dirt on his body anyway. It's like... I don't know. I think some of it came off sort of insincere, but not restrictive out of the Hall of Fame insincere. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, not something that should keep him out of canon.
To wipe away all the pros on his resume or the good things on his resume. And honestly, if I'm a voter, so the guy cares what people think. So he's got a little propaganda going on. First of all, I just assume most owners have that on some level.
I don't know if they have their own production company.
Like, no. But on some level, most owners are trying to manipulate the message or the way they're... They all have PR guys. They all have PR firms. They all, you know, care about those types of things. And they're all in bed with various people in business.
They all have crisis management teams.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, they're all doing it. I don't know how well each one does it. That's their issue to decide. The dynasty thing... First of all, the side note... So, did Jeff Benedict make like $9 million for the dynasty?
Sounds like he did.
It was like
well,
27 yeah. divided by 3 or something. They threw a number out there. I was like, damn. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't even count the book. That was just the video version.
Right.
Although I'm not sure how much money was made on the book because it seems like they gave the book to everybody.
I got a free book.
Everybody did. Season ticket holders, the voters. There was even one voter that's like, you already sent me this. Why are you sending another copy?
Thanks, Jeff. We're good.
I wanted to read it. I'll read it.
We're all set over here. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Listen to this. This is from last year when his name, he didn't make it to the final decision, but his name got put onto the ballot, and CBS covered it, and Steve Burton talked about it. And just listen, this is sort of, and this isn't to, you know, take anything away from the news here. I mean, it was news that they're giving you. But just listen to the way they talk about it.
Patriots owner Robert Kraft could soon join an elite group.
Kraft was just named a finalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2024, and WBZ Sports Director Steve Burton joins us now. Steve, this would be a big honor for Mr. Kraft.
Yeah, and let's hope this guy gets in. Robert Kraft is one of 12 finalists for the Hall of Fame, chosen from a group of 29, by the way, in the coach and contributor category. The Patriots owner was also a finalist last year. Now, this is Kraft's 30th season as the Patriots owner. The team has won, what, 6 Super Bowls under his leadership? With the Pittsburgh Steelers for the most by a single franchise. In the 5 years before he bought the Patriots, they'd won only 19 of 80 games, but they were back in the playoffs for the first time in 8 seasons in his first year of ownership. The Brookline native was a 23-year-old.
All right, Brian, you can stop it right there. I think we get the gist. I mean, this does seem like it was printed out and given to everybody. It was like, here, you know, Stacy was probably the one distributing most of it, but it was a blitz. I mean, there was a blitz each time, and that was just what we heard. I mean, forget about that. We're not voting. That's just to get to courting the popular opinion. Everybody around here, I think, probably would be fine with Robert Kraft making it to the Hall of Fame. I don't think there's a lot of people around New England who would be against that. But you can just sort of tell. And that's like, you know, he's right there with the stats. He's right there with the numbers. He's right there with everything. And, you know, he's a good newsman, obviously. But I'm sure that a lot of that stuff was delivered right to him and ready to be put out there.
NBC is the home of All Access and
absolutely
Patriots preseason games and fifth quarter. And they're a business partner with the New England Patriots, which means they're a business partner with Robert Kraft.
Yep.
But I would also say this is how business is done.
That's
I remember
how it's done,
before Andre Tippett got in. There were presentations of information that went out. There were like packets of why Andre Tippett should be a Hall of Famer. And this is the system they've created. Like, baseball has the totally other different system, right? They all just sit at home with their ballots and pick. Like, there's no in-person Zoom calls, deliberations, presentations, right? They come up with their criteria, their research. That's how theirs is done.
Tippett's criteria for me was he was the only good player on the team for most of my childhood.
Well, he was also my favorite player, and I always thought if he hadn't played in the same era as Lawrence Taylor, would have been looked at as a dominant beast, but he wasn't. A, his team was not nearly as good,
right?
And he probably wasn't as good as Lawrence Taylor, who most people believe is the greatest defensive player to ever play football.
All time.
There's no shame in that. Yeah, there's no doubt Tippett was a Hall of Famer in my mind, but there were presentations made. There were packets and pamphlets and binders every year trying to get interest and, you know, drum up more votes. That's the way they do it in football. So where did Stacy, Robert, whoever, where did they cross a line that it turned into a negative, diminishing returns? Like, how did they rub people the wrong way? Was it the cajoling or the cornering or the patting on the back or the food or the, like, where did they cross a line? And now it seems like there's been blowback from it that has actually adversely affected his candidacy.
Yeah, it's a good question. And it's one that I
think Stacy asked it. I think there's a place in there where it's quoted, like, he asked a voter, like, how much is too much? Like, where should we stop?
Yeah, should we try? Am I bothering you? Am I being annoying? Is this too much? Is this too little? Should we keep going? Should we stop? Right. Like, they're like, just go away, Stacy. Like, come on.
Like, too late.
Yeah. It's just, the fact that we're at this point now, it's like, come on. Stop being so dead. And that's part of it, too, is part of that sliminess. Like, don't act like you want it. Just, you know, hang out and be seen. And eventually someone's going to come and ask you. And it's like, okay. You know, like, it's like you're trying to join a country club or something.
Does it bother you? Like, my feelings about Kendrick Bourne.
I think that's annoying. Yeah.
Do you think people that campaign for captain or campaign for Hall of Fame or campaign for all-star votes, like, I didn't really love the push that the Celtics put on for, was it Derek White they really tried to get in? Like, I don't know. If the guy's an all-star, if the guy's a captain, if the guy's a Hall of Famer, I feel like 99 times out of 100, organically, it happens.
Well, organically, sometimes it does happen, and then the teams take, you know, they try and grab on to the viral thing. Like, I remember like, I was Puig or something. You'd Puig for MVP, and then the team got involved, and it was a whole thing.
Yeah.
I remember that going on, and that was sort of annoying, but that's just, you know, random stuff like that. If it's organic, people know it, you know, and you can tell when you're being sort of put on by it. But this isn't a public vote. This is just these 50 people, you know. It's just these voters for the Hall of Fame, and trying to sway them is just a whole different thing. It's just, it's very secretive. It's very meh, you know. Like, I find it all very greasy. Like, I don't like the way it comes off. And that's not to say he shouldn't be campaigning. You know, you want to get in the Hall of Fame? Of course you do. Who wouldn't want to be in the Hall of Fame? And if that's what it takes to get in, because other people have been doing that same thing, as you said, there's a whole package for Andre Tippett, of course.
Right.
Everybody who's ever played in the NFL probably put one of those things together, and it's just a question of how aggressive they are with it. Seems like the Patriots are pretty aggressive. It seems like from this, I'm not reading any stories about anybody else going over the top like this, but you're also not reading a lot of stories of anybody else with this many boxes checked, to put it as Stacey James did, and other people, Bill Polian, who's not in. So there's a little bit of both. Like, it's hard to really pin down exactly what the thing is here. But I think you're probably right, Andy. It's the excessive sort of, come on, let me in. Did I tell you about this? What about this? We did this, and we also this, and this. And I think that combined with some of the scandals, which shouldn't be disqualifying, but some of the scandals and the movie and some of this other stuff, I just think maybe you're rubbing people the wrong way. And I don't know. I mean, it shouldn't come down to that, but it seems like that's probably what it is.
So my next question is, because I always try to do this, because we get caught up. We're in Boston. We're in New England. We're in Patriot Nation. This is the lead story on ESPN today. Yeah. A long story. Did you do a word count? It's got to be a couple thousand words. Does the rest of the country care? Does the rest of the football world care? Like, does this deserve to be the lead story on ESPN in week one of the season? Winners write history inside Robert Kraft's 12-year Hall of Fame quest?
Maybe they think this is as relevant as the Patriots are going to be all season, so they might as well put it out now.
That's
could be
a
that.
Great question.
Yeah.
Pounce while people care about Patriots. Patriots is a thing. Maybe. I feel like if I read this about Jerry Jones, or if I read this about whoever the next owner may be that thinks they deserved, from afar, from here, I wouldn't really care. I'd be like, he probably should want to get in the Hall of Fame.
Whatever.
He's a pretty good owner. But this is the
But all those other
story.
Teams didn't have a big 10-part docuseries come out this year. I mean, you know, there's...
No, I know. But again, I asked the same question about that. I wondered who watched that. Who cared about that? Was that just for the Patriot Nation people? Did people in Seattle, did people in California, did they watch that? Did they care?
Good question.
I find it hard to believe that people in Seattle went 10 episodes deep in that and said, yeah, this is really worth my time. What'd you say that you give like 3 episodes for a show? Wasn't that you who told me that? You give 3 episodes to test a show. Maybe it was Fitzy.
Yeah, it wasn't me.
You give like 3 episodes to test a show. Mm-hmm. Maybe they did that. But you think a lot of people all around the country really cared enough to watch all 10 episodes of The Dynasty?
I would say probably not. I would say probably not. It was out in February. I mean, it was after the Super Bowl. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe there was people just looking for football content after the season ended.
Same with this.
In general.
If I'm a Packers fan, I'm like, well, Robert's not in the Hall of Fame. Next story. Click. Like, I'm not reading the whole story. I read it because we're here and we lived it. And it's our team and our that whole thing and our job. But all like if this were another team with another owner, there's zero chance I would have read this whole story today.
Yeah.
Then you're a real schmuck.
Oh, ouch, Robert. That's rude. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll continue with this. And Gerard Mayo spoke today. Team's getting ready for Seattle, maybe going 2-0. What's that mean for Robert Kraft? If the guy he just hired starts the season, the new generation of
Hall of Fame, baby,
with a 2-0 record, what's that going to mean? We'll talk all about that right after Brian Frazoco tells you what's trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
The Boston Red Sox lost to the Baltimore Orioles 5-3 last night at Fenway Park. Cutter Crawford earned the loss, giving up 3 runs on 7 hits over 6 1/3 innings pitched. The rubber match of this series is tonight on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. First pitch tonight is at 7:10. Nick Pivetta will get the start for Boston, facing off against Baltimore Dean Kramer. Our coverage will begin at 6:10 with the MassMutual Red Sox pregame show with Joe Weil. Sox currently sit 4 games back of a wildcard spot. Patriots are back at practice today as the team gets ready for their Week 2 matchup against the Seattle Seahawks on Sunday. Pats are currently 3-point underdogs heading into that game. 49ers star running back Christian McCaffrey, he missed the team's Monday night game against the Jets due to an Achilles issue, but according to head coach Kyle Shanahan, McCaffrey could have played if it had been a playoff game. I'm Brian Frazoco, your next trending in about an hour.
Gerard Mayo today, he addressed the media, as did David Andrews, as did Jacoby Brissett. I thought that was an interesting answer right there. Because he's also told us a couple times now, we're going to run the ball. That's just what we're going to do, and you got to stop it, and that's yep. that. And now he's talking about the things we did in Week 1 aren't going to necessarily carry over to Week 2 unless we continue to improve. And I wonder if that's sort of a – I wonder if that's kind of a call to action to Jacoby Brissett, maybe, the wide receivers. He did answer a question about the wide receivers a little bit later on. How'd you take that comment?
First of all, I've never really heard the second part. We've all heard Belichick year 2 jump with players.
Right.
I've never really heard the Week 2 jump. That the biggest jump from Week 1 to Week 2, like, I've never really heard that brought up. I thought that was an interesting idea from Mayo,
I guess. An interesting idea, too, because a lot of teams didn't seem ready for Week 1, you know?
Sure.
Like, so there's going to be a, you'd think, anyway, there's going to be an improvement there.
But that's one of those, like, look at it from two different vantage points.
Right.
They're going to be better, too, if you think there's going to be a huge jump from the Seattle defense or the Seattle offense or Geno Smith or whatever they bring to the table. So, but like Ramondre Stevenson, I don't know that he can be much better. I don't want to be that guy like, oh, Homer Stevenson's awesome, but could he be much better than the way he played? The line could make it easier on him.
They could.
And he could put up bigger numbers.
So, yes, I think he could.
See, I think he couldn't be any better.
I don't know if
he could have 118 of 120
tackles.
Right,
okay.
That's
so
what
fine.
I mean.
But I think that he could have a better day. Like,
oh, yeah, much more
absolutely.
Production.
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely. If his line did anything for him. If he
right.
started breaking tackles downfield instead of breaking tackles at the line of scrimmage, maybe he rushes for 200 yards on 25 carries.
Sure.
And has a massive day. So I think the line could absolutely be better. I think the receivers could absolutely be better, although there's a lot of the All-22 crew doing a lot of breakdowns about receivers that were open and weren't taken advantage of, and Jalen Polk was open. Jalen Polk, actually, it came across my Twitter. I don't dabble in analytics all that much, but he had, I think, the best, like, gut open at some point, distance from the defender, something number. It was like the greatest number in the league. Like
separation number or something?
Yeah, but it was different because there was no, like, I don't know. It was a new number I hadn't. It was like 2.54 yards or something.
If I haven't heard of the number, I generally am like, this is BS.
Yeah, I scroll through it.
Right, I don't think so.
But like, apparently, based on eyes and analytics, there were more receivers open than you might think based on the way the passing game went. Now, I would defend Jacoby Brissett and say if he gets better protection and can stand there and look downfield longer,
right,
maybe he'll find those receivers.
Did he have a chance to even get
right
to
no
see them, right?
Those might have been the times when he was running for his life for a first down or taking a big pop in the backfield, those whatever 14 times we tallied. So yeah, they can absolutely be better. They'll need to be better. I don't know if I just assume it happens. Like, there was a weird presumptuous nature to that. Oh, the biggest jump you'll see is week one to week two. And why? I mean, you tell me Jalen Polk couldn't have a massive jump in week five, like suddenly it all kind of clicks and he feels the game slow down, or he's, you know, faced zone and in this.
Well, I mean, let's just take the offense, for example. There's a ton of rookies on this offense.
Sure.
All up and down. I know Drake May's not playing, but outside of him, there's still, and I guess Baker isn't either, but there's still a bunch of guys out there. It's their first NFL game, and they're expected to be big parts of the offense. I mean, that's just sure. You know, that's just how it's going to be. You had a rookie starting at guard. You had a rookie wide receiver out there. You know, you had the rookie tight end. I don't know how many snaps he got, but he was in uniform. So, you know, you had all those rookies out there, and I think that there's something to that. You know, the first game they ever play, there's going to be an improvement, you'd think, in week two.
An improvement, sure. And in week three. And in week four. That's my point. Like, it's almost, if they don't have a big jump this week, was that their chance to have a big jump? And then it'll just be little jumps the rest of the year? Should I give up on big jumps? I'm not giving up on big jumps in week two.
Okay.
There could be big jumps in week six. big jumps in week 8, 10, 12. You never know when the light goes on. And then you get to the point where we'll start talking about rookie walls and are they fading and the season's getting long and it's wearing them down and all of those issues. So, no, but I thought it was good messaging on the end part. We've talked a lot about in the last couple weeks, week plus, his messaging has been better. He's kind of cleaned up brush fires. I thought the idea, because he almost had a brush fire today. I don't know if you saw. You know, one of Ramondre's goals that he has for himself, I'm not going to get into it. He caught himself, which I think was good. Like, don't be an error repeater.
Right.
Don't tell us that Ramondre wants to rush for 2,000 yards, because that would have been a terrible thing to say. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, we know you want to run the ball every game. So in the back of Ramondre's head, he's probably thinking, well, if they want to run the ball every game and I stay healthy, then I can run for 2,000 yards.
Yeah, I could have a...
I don't need the head coach saying it in a press conference.
Sure.
Right? Let's stay away from that. So he's learned there. And I told you, I think the biggest challenge this team faces this week is dealing with success. It's easy when everybody said you suck.
Right.
Us against the world. There's no better, you know, bullseye bulletin board material for a coach than everybody thinks you stink and don't have a chance. It's us against the Bengals team. It's us against the Bengals crowd, the jungle, the whole thing. Now you're at home. There's going to be 68,000 people screaming that love you. There's people that are already... Did I hear Jones say 3-0? What has happened to him?
Did Jones say 3-0? I heard him say 2-0.
Yeah, and I think he brought up 3-0 and not necessarily...
After the Jets game Monday night, he said 3-0 is on the table.
Why is everybody stealing my phrase, too? 0-17 was on the table. 3-0 is on the table. Yeah, it's on the table for now until they lose on Sunday. Then it'll no longer...
17-0 is on the table,
right?
Well, you sort of save some face when you just say on the table. You're not predicting table, it. You're saying, there's a possibility of it.
It's out there. It's like when I say, I'm not eating it, but it's on the table. The other new head coaches, if you go back through the list here, and I'm not counting Pierce because he was an interim coach, but the other head coaches who started in week one, Gerard Mayo, really, Jim Harbaugh, and McDonald were the only ones that scored wins. None of them had big, oh my God, like this is amazing type of wins. You could say that maybe for Mayo because everyone expected him to be so bad. Seattle, I don't think, was a huge surprise. And L.A., I don't think, was a huge surprise either. Gerard Mayo was a big surprise. They were all good wins. But the losses, the new coaches and their losses were all bad. Like that Raheem Morris, that was an awful loss to Justin Fields in Pittsburgh. Dan Quinn got smoked by Baker Mayfield. Who else? Brian Callahan lost to the Bears and a quarterback who couldn't throw 100 yards because he was getting punts blocked and pick sixes and stuff like that. And Canales over there in Carolina. I mean, that's going to be – I don't know if people are necessarily blaming him. I know you had Rex Ryan there, Brian. If he's going after Canales, I'm not sure that's necessarily his fault. But for most of these new head coaches, it was a very bad week one. And for Gerard Mayo, he had the best week one out of all of them.
Absolutely.
And I don't think it's even close.
No, it isn't. And, I mean, generally speaking, there's a reason you're a new head coach. Your team stinks. It's like we talk about the quarterback. Yeah, it's great to want to go to a team that is ready to – you know, put the structure and support around you. Usually the team's picking in the top five for a reason. Unless they trade it up, they're a bad football team with a lot of holes. You're going to a bad team. Same thing with a new coach. You're going to a bad team. Now, if you're Harbaugh, you have a franchise quarterback, a stud quarterback to start the process with. So you benefit from that. But, yeah, as much as I think the Canales guy is going to be an absolute show in Carolina.
I think anybody would have a tough time there.
But you almost can't fire him, right? How many one and dones are you going to do? You're going to just keep firing people if you're Tepper?
Maybe.
Tepper tantrum? That's what I keep calling him.
He is kind of right. He's throwing drinks at fans. He's the type of hothead that could probably just do that and not care.
But does he only have yes men around him? Doesn't somebody, at some point, don't we need to give a guy multiple years.
Yeah, and I think they get rid of that quarterback and try somebody else
right.
before they move on from Canales. I think that's one of the rare instances where they'll side with the coach and be like, all right, this kid clearly is not ready to be or not ever going to be ready to be in the NFL.
They've had seven head coaches since 2018.
Jesus.
That's ridiculous.
So many.
And you wonder why they stink.
Yeah.
I mean, there's other reasons, but how can you possibly, like, if you're an offensive player, you've had seven different playbooks, schemes, leadership, like everything changes
yeah.
when a coach comes in. How can you possibly do your job? How can you possibly build any continuity?
Good question. I don't know how you
can. That's why you stink.
And that's part of it, and also because they drafted a quarterback who lines up behind the guard half the time.
You really fixate on that. You make one mistake. You've never stepped behind the wrong microphone?
Never.
You've never gone behind one that the red light wasn't on?
I've never done that.
I can be honest. I make mistakes. Sometimes when I'm on TV, I'm looking at the wrong camera, and you hear the guy yell, 42, 42. Turn your head. You're looking at the wrong camera.
Have you ever seen a quarterback line up behind the guard and wait for a snap?
In the NFL before?
I've never seen that before. That was the first time I'd ever seen it. All right, fine. I'd never seen it before.
Fall River's seen it.
You got a quarterback who's doing that, then your quarterback sucks. I'm sorry. It is a bad sign.
I think it's a bad sign.
All right, let's go to Paul in Rhode Island before the break. Hi, Paul.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Guys, I'm going to go all in on Robert Kraft. I have to go. And I have to go with his late wife. They did not move this team to Hartford, which is a garbage market, New York corner. But I'm going to have to say that, you know, also maybe Jonathan had a word in, but the man deserves to go in. And I'll say Jerry Jones. They're 80-something years old. Eventually, you have to respect people that own these teams. They want to make money. And at the same time, you have to understand, Myra Kraft had a voice in this team, okay? She didn't even want Hernandez here.
Okay, well,
I think he got his stories mixed up.
I think he's talking about Christian Peter or whatever that
yes.
guy's name was, right? Yeah.
Myra Kraft was very respected and loved by everybody in the organization,
absolutely.
And she indeed had a voice in the team. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And also,
what does that have to
Jerry
do with
Jones has
about?
Been in the Hall of Fame for 7 years, so like he's already there, like... It's the whole thing is Kraft.
Paul's
Kraft,
the best.
This is what it's about.
I love Paul. Great.
Okay. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Julian Edelman on his podcast. Everybody's on their podcast. Or actually, no. He was on The Herd with Colin Cowherd, and he thinks the Patriots are going 2-0. We'll talk about that and what that means for Robert Kraft right after this. Julian Edelman, he was on The Herd with Colin Cowherd. He had another quote that we'll play in a little bit, but I wanted to just sort of get that one going because a 2-0 start for the Patriots, first of all, is going to be very, very tough on people's knockout pools if they're still in them, which they probably aren't. But it's also, I think, I thought that first game was a statement going 2-0. That just sort of adds to the statement. It makes the statement a little louder. And it also, I think, with this article coming out about Robert Kraft, is something he's really, really shooting for and he really hopes to see because at the very least, you know, who knows how the season's going to go. But there's this thing coming out about he really wants to be in the Hall of Fame and, oh, how badly he wants to get in. And why are these people keeping him out? And he's being so clingy and annoying about it and blah, 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 blah. And then you can, at the very least, for these 2 weeks, say, hey, my new guy off to an undefeated start. All right. After 20 plus years of all this greatness, I picked another guy and look at this start that he's off to. What else do you need to see? And of course, you need to see the rest of the season. But at the very least, right now, it's good counterbalance to this article.
Yeah. And now we said it earlier. I don't know if he needs to buff up his actual resume. It seems like his resume is Hall of Fame worthy. It seems like there's something else at play here. But it certainly doesn't hurt your resume if you hire another coach and he's the best of that cycle. I don't want to like put the cart before the horse and anoint him a great coach, a good coach. He's 1-0.
Right.
So that puts him ahead of some of the other guys. Now, there may also be value, and they didn't really want to touch this. Gerard didn't want to touch this, but he hired the first black head coach in the history of the organization in a time when the NFL is actively trying to promote minorities in their coaching ranks, mm-hmm. whether they be black, Hispanic, women, right? Like, they even have the rules now if you develop coordinators that become head coaches that are...
Draft picks, right?
You get draft picks.
Yeah.
Or even front office, I think, is included in that. So he... Now, he did it his own way. He didn't bring an outsider in, and I know some people got mad at the time, the interview, blah, blah, blah. But there's no way...
Oh, for the rule, yeah.
There's no way this can be seen as a negative if Gerard Mayo's a good head coach. I think most people will go back to, wait a minute, the only coaches he's ever hired are Pete Carroll, Bill Belichick, and then Gerard Mayo if he ends up being a good coach. Boy, that guy really seems to know leaders of men and how to hire coaches. Yeah. Whereas we were just talking.
Not that Carroll was great here, but I mean.
But he's a Hall of Fame coach.
Yeah, sure.
He's going into the Hall of Fame someday.
Yep.
So the only people he's hired right now are Hall of Fame coaches. Now, Gerard Mayo, I have no idea where he goes. We'll see. But he's 1-0. You can't. There couldn't have been a better start to this season. Now, I will also say, Julian Edelman, thanks for being Captain Obvious. You mean if they run the ball 25 times for 120 yards and the quarterback doesn't turn the ball over and they force turnovers
and they hold
the
other team to 10 points.
Like, yeah. Obviously, they're going to win. Like, you're going to win every game you play if you do that formula. The challenge will be, can they run the ball 25 times for 120 yards against a more physical, challenging defensive front led by a guy who historically in Baltimore has led defenses that are good, are stingy? Like, the challenge is very different. Because we talked about Lou...
Amarillo.
I don't think that's it.
No?
You say it with confidence. I say it with no confidence. But that does make
Lou
you
Amarillo.
Right.
Hold on.
It's not Amarillo. Anarumo.
Yeah, Lou Amarillo is the guy for the Islanders.
Yeah, I knew it was. That was not right.
Else. Yeah, Lou.
But you said it with confidence.
I did.
I should learn that. Just say it wrong with confidence and they'll
Absolutely.
Love you.
I do that all the time.
That's very politician.
Yeah, how do you say it?
See, I struggle, so I stumble all over it. I should have let you just say it, and we should have run with your pronunciation. That's wrong. Just say it right. But he's a guy, they gave up a ton of yards last year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody loves that guy, but they give up a ton of yards. We'll see what Mike McDonald gives up against this Patriots front. But if, yes, I'm with you 1,000%, Julian Edelman. This is why we need more players in the media, because they break things down in ways that we can't. If they can replicate the performance from week one and week two, they'll probably win the game.
Lou Anarumo.
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 That's it.
Anarumo. If I say it a few times, it'll stick. Anarumo.
Amarillo, different guy. But yeah, there you go. 617-779-7937. Let's go to Coach in New Hampshire. He has a thought on the Patriots. Go ahead, Coach.
Yes. My thoughts are twofold. One on special teams, one on defense. I don't know who the special teams coach is, but my God, he brings energy and juice to that sideline. And if there's a better special teamer in the entire league other than number 41, Brandon Schooler, I don't even know his name, but the dude makes every single tackle on special teams. Number two, for Joe Cardona to snap the ball, sprint down and put his hat on the onion and cause a fumble,
someone's listening.
Number three, hey, Joey Sly, I don't know who you are, but you're doing a good job. And defensively, oh, my God, if you guys aren't stoked about Keon White, Juwan Bentley, and obviously Kyle Duggar, that could be a top five NFL defense. So I just mentioned two out of three aspects of the game where the Patriots obviously had a great week one, but maybe it carries forward every week. And if the offense does just a little something, maybe we get to 10 wins.
All right, thanks for the call, Coach. Can they win 10 games on special teams and defense?
You could stop after, can they win 10 games? I'll answer and say no, they cannot win 10 games.
The special teams coach, by the way, is named Jerry Springer. I'm not even kidding, Jeremy Springer.
Jeremy.
Yeah, I have a friend named Jeremy. We call him Jerry, so he's Jerry Springer.
And he's definitely energetic. He is a cliche special teams coach. I think I saw him coming out with some energy drinks. Like, I think he rides that wave a little bit to practice. The thing that I found interesting, and I meant to bring this up the other day, when we were kind of breaking down the game.
Mm-hmm.
I need to hit my stride here in how these weeks go, by the way.
Okay.
I'm sort of new to this. Like, Monday's post game. What's Tuesday? When do you start previewing? How's the Thursday night football? Like, there's a whole schedule here that I'm not quite ready for. But I forgot to mention, so they did less on special teams in training camp. We all noticed it.
Yep.
Schooler didn't do any special team specific stuff. Schooler played defense in every drill. There was none of the offense and defense are on one field and Slater and Chris Board and some of those guys. The Cody, what the hell was his name? Not Kessler. Who's Cody Kessler?
Cody Kessler?
No, it's
Cody. He was a quarterback, Cody Kessler.
There's a Cody guy, the special teamer. Anyway, the core special teamers would all be by themselves, like four or five
Cody
of them.
Davis.
Cody Davis. Yeah. They would all be doing drills for special teams on the side field because they didn't really have a role in offense or defense. There was none of that this year. And I wondered about it. Honestly, I was like, why aren't we treating Schooler like Slater? Why isn't he doing the tennis ball drills? They run in circles.
Right.
They pick up a towel. All this stuff. I don't know what it does, but whatever. And the special teams were better, at least for 1 week. They were much better. We're just going to ignore the first play.
Right, other than that first play. But yeah, in general, I'd say
much better.
Coverage was good. Kicks were good.
So they care about it less or focus less on it in terms of roster and practice time. They focused less on it in a way, and yet they were better.
Maybe that's why Bill Belichick doesn't want to talk about the Patriots.
Right.
Maybe it's because of that. You know?
Like they got rid of the special teamers and they don't even practice it and they're better than me. What the hell's going on over there?
All of a sudden it's actually really working. That was the most special teams heavy call I think we've ever had.
I'm also not willing to say that Schooler is the best special teamer in the NFL. I don't follow that closely enough. I will say, I don't know if you heard this in the offseason, Matthew Slater said Schooler has the potential to be the greatest of all time.
I heard him say that.
That's crazy to me.
That's a
coming from the guy that some people think is the greatest of all time, Matthew Slater.
Yeah.
It'd be like Brady saying, I think May might be the greatest of all time. People, that would resonate a little bit.
It certainly would if it was Tom Brady saying that, yes.
People are making fun of me in the chat, by the way. You made me join.
7937, that's why I did. So if you wanted to know Twitch chat here, if you're in the Twitch chat, Andy Hart has signed up for Twitch, and I told him, it's like, yeah, all these people, they really want you to be part of it. They're making fun of you. I mean, that's what they do.
Yeah.
All the time.
Are you standing on milk crates so you can see Arcan?
Is he?
No, I'm not. I'm actually having to hunch over because
you're too tall.
I like you don't like standing, huh?
Not really, no.
I like standing because I get energy.
Good
I got to move around, but like I got to kind of slouch because I'm too tall for the microphone.
Yes. The one time you get to say that. 617-779-7937. There's your phone number. We're going to be joined by Alex Cora here in about 20 minutes. In the meantime, the Red Sox, tough loss last night to Baltimore. They have the third and final game of that series tonight here at Fenway. We'll react to some of that. The offense disappearing again. And does this Red Sox team have things they can build on going forward? We'll get to all of that next.